All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuck nicks? How's it going? What's happening? Where are we at? I a lot of shows this week. I don't know if you listened yesterday. We had our Oscar clip show with all the nominees past and appearances, some way back, some new. That was exciting. You should listen to that. Oscars are coming up on Sunday. I don't know. You know, for I think a couple years there, they seem to kind of not matter. But I think maybe they matter again to some degree, at least as entertainment. The field is good this year. And, you know, I think despite whatever controversy, you know, Will Smith smacking Chris Rock might have kind of reinvigorated the franchise. I don't think people are tuning in to see if there's going to be any, you know, actor-on-actor action. But it did bring a lot of attention to it. But outside of that, Kimmel's back, which is good. It's very funny, handles it very well. And I don't know, a lot of good movies. And I'm going to be working that night. That's how that's going to go. Today on the show, Rory Scovel is back. He was on the show back in 2017, episode 834. He has a new comedy special on Max called Religion, Sex, and a Few Things in Between. And I liked it. I loved it. I haven't seen Rory in a long time. I didn't know what he was up to, but he somehow rides the line. It's some pretty dirty business and some pretty provocative stuff about religion and sex. And I never would have expected it from old Rory. But again, haven't been watching him work out. Always knew he was kind of a riff wizard. But this thing, because he's such a pleasant guy and a seemingly decent fella, he can really get away with some stuff that was pretty pretty exciting. I'm thrilled with the intelligent filth and aggressive social satire that's going on occasionally. And I didn't expect it from Rory, but he delivered. He delivered. It's on Max. Religion, Sex, and a Few Things in Between. We have a good talk. I like the guy. Tonight, I'm in Portland, Maine, at the State Theater. Tomorrow, Medford, Mass. That's just outside of Boston at the Chevalier Theater. Saturday in Providence. Come on, Providence. Rhode Island. Strand Theater. And Sunday, Tarrytown, New York, at the Tarrytown Music Hall. Later in March, Atlanta, Georgia. I'm at the Buckhead on the 22nd. Boise, Idaho, at the Egyptian Theater for Comedy Fort at Treefort Music Fest. Madison, Wisconsin, April 23rd at the Barrymore. Milwaukee, Wisconsin, at Turner Hall Ballroom, April 4th. Chicago, Vic Theater, April 5th. Minneapolis, Pantages, April 6th. Austin, Texas, at the Paramount for Moon Tower, April 18th. Montclair, New Jersey, on Thursday, May 2nd at the Wellmont Center. Glenside, Pennsylvania, Philadelphia area, Little Jaunt. Oh, boy. I remember when I was doing that show once. You remember that? That was some business when I wrecked my car like a fucking idiot. Had to rent a car, plowing down to Glenside, checking my map, parentheses, texting probably, and just looked up, too late, slammed on the brakes, smacked a car. That car smacked another car. One guy got out holding his neck. The other guy, who knows what happened? I just remember I was, I had to make this show. It was fucking nuts. Didn't know what to do. Felt bad, stupid. I think everybody's fine. But I remember calling Hertz and they're like, yeah, just leave it. just leave it and tell us where you left it. Can you move it? Cops came. Had my own insurance, but from that day forward, I do take, I'll just take all the insurance on the car. On the rental cars. I don't give a shit. I know some people say yours covers this or that. Does it, though? The liability is sort of what's important. You know, you want to be able to wreck a car and walk away from it and just say, yeah, I left it in the lot right where it happened. And that's the end of it. So it's worth it. You know, God forbid I wreck another rental car. But, you know, shit happens. I'll be in Washington, D.C. on May 4th at the Warner Theater. You can go to WTFpod.com/tour for all the tickets. Also wanted to mention a recent guest, a guy I like. Dan Soder just put up a new hour-long special on his YouTube channel. It's called Dan Soder on the Road. Go check that out over on YouTube. Oh, you know what? I just had an article on my phone. And I've talked about this before, but I remember It's about AC/DC. This is not, you know, breaking news or anything. But my recollection of the first time I saw AC/DC was at the Civic Auditorium in Albuquerque, New Mexico. That place was a fucking shit show because it was falling apart. If the band was loud enough, pieces of the ceiling would come down. Little bits, not major pieces. But I don't remember what year it was. But my recollection was I saw AC/DC with Bon Scott open for Journey. And I hate to add this on, but I think in full transparency, I was there to see Journey. But I remember being crammed up against that stage, watching Bon Scott lay it out, and I didn't even know what I was watching. Didn't even know. But years later, in San Francisco, I did an event with, I think he was the bass player of Journey, Ross Valerie. I don't remember what the event was. I remember it was outdoors. It was Union Square. I don't remember what year it was, but I was there talking to the bass player of Journey, and I said, you know, I saw you guys back in the 70s, AC/DC opened for you. And he said, nope. And I'm like, yep. And he's like, no, we opened for them. I'm like, I don't think so. So for years, I didn't know if my memory was fucked up. And I assumed that he knew what the fuck he was talking about, but I was pretty locked in to the idea that I saw AC/DC open for Journey and a little ashamed because I went to see Journey. My friends were into them. A couple good songs. You can't disregard Journey totally. But some guy just DM'd me something from, classic rock and roll culture, whatever the hell that is. Steve Perry recalls AC/DC opening for Journey, quote unquote, they spanked us bad. Former Journey frontman Steve Perry recalled his horror when AC/DC toured as their opening act and made it nearly impossible to follow their performance. Maybe that's why I don't remember anything about the Journey show. The groups who both played their first shows on the same night in 1973 toured the U.S. together in the 70s as Bon Scott led the Australian outfit to the big time while Journey were already closer to the goal, as Perry told whoever. It was this new band, and everybody said they were really rocking. He said, I was showing up the last 10 minutes of every show. I'm trying to sing all my stuff and warm up, and I hear this, I'm a problem child. And I said, what the hell is that? And I run out and I see Bon Scott just laying it down. And the Young Brothers are driving and the audience has their fists in the air, just shaking in time with the music, he continues. I was stunned. I just said, this is unbelievable. What is this? And then I had to follow this band, go out there, sing Wheel in the Sky. What am I doing? They're killing me here. He went on to admit that, quote, they made us play better, man. They spanked us bad. I'm being honest with you. They spanked us a good one. And any band member will admit that. We had to learn how to play all these Journey songs that we originally wrote with a new intensity. Who knew that? You know, somebody, not all the band members will admit that. I mean, your bass player, he just remembers that you opened for them. I guess that was what his insecurity did. Just switched the memory around. Did not deal with the fact that you got handed your ass. I like the idea that in the late 70s, Journey had to figure out how to be a better rock band because fucking raucous, raw fucking AC/DC just handed them their ass. I like it. I like that my memory's intact. At least that one. At least that one. I knew it. Yes, so an update on the foot. You want that? An update on the foot? Well, I'm going to give it to you. I went to see Dr. James Wang over at whatever it is, Spine Docs, or a big building. A lot of orthopedics in there. Foot doctor. I like this guy. I like this guy, Wang. Like, I was there 3 weeks ago. He's like, leave the boot on. Don't fuck with it. Like, he got me so scared about the location of the fracture on my fifth metatarsal near the end of it toward the ankle, about these tendons pulling that bone apart constantly. When I went in there 3 weeks ago, he said, yeah, it's filling in. He kept using this ice analogy, but there's still water inside. It's still very fragile. You know, I'm like, all right, I get it. I'll do what I can. Yeah, keep the boot on, sleep in it, shower in it. So I've been doing that. I had that boot on. I went in there yesterday. So that was, it wasn't yesterday. It was Monday. So I went in there Monday and he took x-rays and I was nervous. You know, it's just fear of this this fucking, you know, surgery of, you know, wearing the boot for months. You know, you get older and one of these things can put you out for half a year. And how many years do you got left? You know what I mean? I need to stay active. I haven't stopped. But, you know, he x-rayed it and he said, look, take the boot off. Walk around on it. He says, it's still there's still a little water inside the ice cube. I'm like, come on, can we not do that? Ice cube analogy makes me nervous. If there's still water in there, then what are we walking around on it for? But he said, look, bones are like muscles. You got to start putting stress on them to make them strong, to make them work. And I'm like, all right. Very nervous. Very nervous. He said, he told me a couple exercises I can't do. But he's like, look, do flat-footed, grounded exercise. You can do leg presses. You can do squats. Told him about the incumbent bike. He just said, can't get up on your toes. Made me nervous. I was literally like, are you sure, man? I mean, I can leave it on another week. He said, look, if you have pain, put it back on, but you got to do it. Got to get out there and put a little stress on that thing. And I'm like, fine. So I take the boot off and I'm walking around like a frightened person. You know, I'm afraid that the fucking thing's just going to snap, but I guess that's normal. But because my foot was inactive so long, the arthritis that we found, which I knew was there, on the last x-rays I took, the bottom knuckle, the bottom joint of my big toe, fucking hurts like crazy. I have it in both toes, but the right toe's, it's been hurting for years. And I've always known it's not good, but I didn't want to get surgery. The last time I was there, he's like, yeah, we'll just get in there, scrape it off, and irrigate the joint. And I'm like, how long is the recovery on that? He said, like 12 days. I'm like, is that possible? So now I got to get that toe working again where it's manageable. I got to get my foot working again. But I'm in, sadly, this is the vanity of it. You know, when I perform, I don't wear sneakers. I'm not a sneaker person. I wear sneakers to the fucking gym. That's where you wear sneakers. When you're out in the world, you wear a boot or a shoe. I'm a boot guy. And I put my whites on, you know, right after I got out of the medical boot, and they felt fine. They've got a weird arch in them, which actually is a lot like the medical boot. So it was fine. But then I put some sneakers on, and I'm like, these are comfortable. And I'm still in this. It took me 2 days to like, are you just going to travel with sneakers and go on stage in fucking sneakers like an animal? So I think I made some midway decision. Remember, Dino made me get these GORUCK boots, which are like, they're like sneakers, but they're a boot vibe. They're really good. I mean, they're apparently genius design, but they feel pretty good. So I might have solved it. But I couldn't believe that even though the boots weren't quite as comfortable on my foot that was broken, that I need to pay attention to, I'm like, is it worth it? Is it worth the risk? I mean, you can't, what are you going to go on stage in fucking sneakers? So it's weird. No matter how sloppy I may look, I have a plan, people. I know what I'm doing. You hear me? Look, Rory Scovel has made a very funny special. Surprising, provocative, dirty, boundary pushing, and he's a pleasant man. It's called Rory Scovel, Religion, Sex, and a Few Things in Between. It's streaming now on Max. I recommend it highly. Listen to me talk to Rory right now. Listen to me and him talk. Sometimes I wish I paid more attention in school, or in some cases, any attention at all. There are probably a lot of things I could have gotten more out of, like literature, and now it's probably not in the cards to go back to school and study the classics. But luckily for us, there's a new podcast called The Foxed Page that dives deep into the best books of all time. This is basically like the best possible college English class, but more relaxed and fun. No pressure of grades or needing to prepare something to say in class. It's only the books you want to read and know about, presented by best-selling author Kimberly Ford. Everything from Cormac McCarthy to Madame Bovary, from classics like Frankenstein to modern hits like Lessons in Chemistry. I love Ireland, but I missed the boat on James Joyce. The Foxed Page has a three-part series on Dubliners, and that's a pretty great starting point. Want to get the most out of what you read? The Foxed Page is for you. Get it now wherever you get your podcast. Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? Well, for me, honestly, It's my stereo system. For years, I've wanted this stereo system. And then at some point, I realized, like, hey, you're saving money. Buy it. So I got a pretty top-of-the-line, tube-driven stereo system. It has changed my life. It's not only great for listening to music. It's great for me to sit there with my guitar while I jam or just rock out. Because when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. Just like the all-new Lexus GX. It has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Available dynamic sky panorama glass roof. Available front row massaging seats. Available 33-inch all-terrain tires. And available multi-terrain select system for off-road driving. Drivability. Any of these options will help you take your Lexus GX to the limit, just like I did with my stereo system. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. How you feeling?
Good. How do you feel?
I'm all right. I never feel great.
It's just always a medium.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's either low or medium.
That's right.
Well, yeah, why? That makes sense.
What do you mean it makes sense for me or
you? I think
you?
There was a time in our lives when things would feel great, and then the older you get, the more aware of the world you become, and it's harder
that.
To not feel guilty if you were to even slightly feel great.
Yeah, well that's a mental thing. I mean, the physical thing is a whole other issue.
Sure. Sure.
Like mentally great, well that's a non-starter for
yeah.
me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I agree. Yeah.
Physically great, diminishing. I don't.
Yeah, well, it can't go the other way.
No, I don't. Yeah, it's hard to accept.
Yeah.
But you're young, no?
I'm youngish. I'm 43. I don't feel young and I don't feel old. I feel literally right in the middle.
Yeah.
That's where I think I'm at.
But you're not freaking out about years?
No, not really.
I mean I'm trying not to, but yeah. All of a sudden my parents are still alive, and that age gap is much shorter than it used to be.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah,
they
yeah.
had me when I was young, right. So now my mother's like 22 years older than me, and I'm like, fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
I've dated that age gap.
Right, right. It starts to become very real.
It's just crazy that they're alive and they did that.
Yeah,
your folks.
Both are passed away.
Really?
My stepmother's alive. And then I have many siblings.
I think I remember when,
your
dad
uncles.
Passed away.
Yeah, June of 2020.
COVID?
No, he had a heart attack.
Quick?
June 26th. I think I wasn't there. Here's my thing when people say a quick heart attack.
Yeah.
I think we want that to be the case.
Sure.
You know when people go, he was dead before he hit the floor.
That's great.
Now, that no one said that because that was not the case.
Because he went
but
to the hospital?
Do you know when people say that? I don't know if that's true.
I think some people get the full seizure, the
yes.
full like you know like the all the pipes just yeah. like poof,
and
the,
you're in it for
the pump
yeah.
shuts down and I think it goes pretty quick
yeah
matter of seconds.
You do hope that.
I know a guy, one of my mentors, he just dropped dead in a parking lot. Great.
And that was it.
Yeah, near
yeah.
right near the where he owned a bookstore. It was
yeah.
perfect.
I would like that's a good way.
Yeah.
I think when it's quick, it's a great way.
Yeah, my dad's just sitting in Albuquerque losing his mind.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out how to shower.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, physically, he's great, which is not great.
Right.
Now, now we're going to have this right. immobilized narcissist who no yeah. longer thinks the world of himself, just yeah. sitting around with no clue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On how to do anything.
Yeah. Not
yeah.
great. Not good.
How old is your dad?
What is he, 86 maybe?
Yeah.
86 this year. I think he's 85.
Yeah.
That's a good run.
That's a good run.
I mean, everyone starts. I mean, it's weird.
I think 80 is 80's good. You get to 80.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you see those people that are 80 that are like, I still ski. You're like, yeah. all right, you're fine. But you see some people that are 80 and they're like,
oh, no.
I'm just taking resources.
Yeah.
And you're
it.
Like, well,
yeah.
you got to go.
How old was your dad? Yeah, time to go.
It's time.
Well, some states you can just do that in. It's time,
yeah.
Dad. It's time.
Yeah.
We're going to take you to the place
yeah, yeah.
where they show you the movie and you slowly go away,
yeah.
like Soylent Green. You lay on a slab.
Yeah. Just, you fade out like a song on the radio. We got to, it's got to yeah. end. When a band can't figure out how a yeah. song should end.
Yeah, yeah.
That's your life.
Just fade out. How old was your dad?
He was 65.
That's too young?
Yeah.
Now, how on top of your heart shit are you?
You know, I'm pretty on top of it. My and this isn't a revelation for me. This is one I've come to from research.
Yeah.
But I'm no longer in this space of, oh, yeah, we've passed on in our families these genetic heart issues, which I know can happen.
Right.
But I'm less in that space and more in the space of,
take care of
yourself. I've never taken care of myself.
Right.
I've never considered what effects food has on me mentally and physically.
Never.
Never. It just never. I always played soccer, and so I ate garbage, and my body would break it down, and I was always like, look at me, I'm fine.
Yeah.
You know, then soccer ends, and you get into stand-up, and you're eating Philly cheesesteaks and
beer
late at night, and I smoked pot. I never got into cigarettes.
No cigarettes.
No. I tried. I really tried. My body rejected it.
Yeah, really?
I don't think I can do it.
No,
I gave it every effort.
Oh,
because I think it's the coolest looking thing you can do.
I did it for years. Not great.
Yeah.
I'm still hooked on nicotine on and off. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So wait, I watched the special. Is it, was it religion, sex, and some stuff?
A few things in between. some stuff in between. Yeah, yeah. I suppose. Yeah.
I watched it, and I can't remember the last time I saw you do comedy, and I was impressed.
Oh, thanks.
I'm just holding back because I don't want to say go fuck yourself for being so funny.
Thank you. Thanks. Thanks for watching it. I appreciate that.
I need to know what everyone's doing. I didn't always used to do that with comics, but now I'm watching just to know where I'm at. On the spectrum of funny.
Yeah.
At this point in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, basically, it's all leading to, can I stop? I think it's time.
I think it's time to
I think it's,
pull the ripcord and
end
it. Yeah.
Reel it in. I've done what I can. I've saved some money.
No. We're too addicted to whatever it is.
Is it? You seem more addicted than me because, well, but you know, we're similar somehow. In that we like to push the audience to a point where you may not get them back.
Yeah.
But you were pretty confident through some pretty dicey stuff. Because I think you can deliver all that filthy business without being menacing. I do it. People are like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy?
He hates me.
He's telling the truth.
Yeah.
What was the, you know, because I know you're like, I know that you're one of these guys that just likes to riff.
Yeah.
And just kind of like do that.
Yeah.
But I mean, I do that, but you make note of the stuff that works.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're
100%.
Not. 100%. Because I haven't seen you, but every time I hear about it, Scoville did, you know, 2 hours, it just riffing.
You know, I this is like everything where you do something one time where it becomes very Paul Bunyan.
It's a mythology.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you did it once.
Yeah. I mean, I do like to do it. I do think I'm good at it. But then I think people then. I think this is the real thing is a lot of my material, I think this goes for you too, is born out of conversational moments on stage.
That's the only way to do it.
But then, when it works, you go, well, it works.
Yeah.
So I'll say it that way and it'll come out that way.
Yeah.
And I think because of that, you've almost just naturally fallen into this place.
It's your style. Your conversational style.
He's just talking. And I love it because I do think it should appear that way.
Me too.
But I think it does give some illusion that I'm doing this every single time.
Well, you made room on the special to dick off.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and you did some dicking off and it paid off.
Yeah.
And that
those are my favorite moments.
They're the best.
Yeah.
Ones you can never get back.
Yes.
You don't remember how they happened.
I know.
I bet you I could identify a couple of them.
And if you try to repeat it, you bomb so badly.
It's
heartbreaking.
Goes right in the garbage. And you're like, what was it about that moment, that night, that made the difference?
Yeah.
Can't identify it.
Yeah.
I recorded some set I did at Elysian for this new set I'm working on. And it was just totally stream of consciousness. It was deep and it had, you know, a sort of point. And I tried twice to sort of get that groove back, and it's just the immediacy or something goes away.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's not there.
Yeah.
And you look at the audience like, this was the funniest thing I ever said 2 nights ago.
I think, you know, my assumption is that because it was born so organically that one time, that the only things that kind of can go on are like five parts of it.
Right.
Can like exist.
Right.
But if you try to do it start to finish.
Right. With the same candid.
Yeah. But like I don't think it means the other stuff can't be there. I think you just have to surprise yourself how you get to those other things again. Cause that's why it happened, I think.
That's right. And what is the meat of it?
Yeah.
And can you isolate that?
Yeah.
And make it work.
How long does it take you to get an hour now? Like if you're like, I've just shot a special.
Year and a half.
All right. I wish I could get that. I'm too slow.
Really?
Yeah, my last special for Netflix was like 2017.
Well, we had a big break.
We did have some time off. We did have a little bit. We did have a little bit of a timeout.
Yeah. There's a 2 to 3 year issue there.
Yeah. But I still think I would have been a little slowish because I just I take a little too long to edit.
Yeah,
sit down and really edit. Stuff out.
I don't know. This new hour plus whatever I'm working on, it usually starts out as like an hour and a half.
Sure. Yeah.
And then I got to figure it out. But it came relatively quick because I just kept going. You know, after, you know, when we could start working again and after Lynn died, I just was like a born again comic.
Yeah.
Like I didn't have nothing else to do.
Right.
So and that's another. I'm out there every fucking night.
Yeah.
You know, just doing it.
Yeah.
And then I book the Dynasty or Largo and I don't have it.
Right.
But I'm like, well, this will make me do something.
Yeah.
And then you just regurgitate. It comes up sometimes.
I think that element when people think like, oh, you just go and make it up. It's a little bit of survival because your back is against the wall. But also,
we do that to ourselves, though.
We do. And also, I think certain brains, and I'm not saying this is status-wise, or we're gifted. Like,
right.
I don't think that. But I do think our brains actually turn on more when we have nowhere else to go.
Well, that's where
survival.
Right. Well, my theory is, but the survival is if you put yourself in a position where you have no choice but to be funny.
Yeah.
You know, then it comes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's if there's a gift, that's it.
You'll find it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, because you're going to be up there and either you're going to make the fact that you're not getting laughs the joke, or the thing will be delivered to you and right. you don't know where it comes from.
Yeah.
I don't know where it comes from.
I think a lot of people don't realize that, you know, we go up to do that hour and what we walk away with is one new sentence where we go, ooh.
Yeah. And then we forget that.
Right there. And then, if you don't record it,
you listen to your recordings?
I wish I did. This is the first time. This hour, this special is the first time I sat down before the tour started in April, 6 a.m., coffee shop on Colorado. Headphones in, listening to a set.
Swerk.
There's very few open at 6 a.m. And immediately chopping out, going, no one ever laughs at that. I know I think it's funny, but the time has come.
To let it go.
To let it go. And I wouldn't allow myself to argue as to why it should stay in. And because of that, not that this album, it's special to me, is like as tight as it could be, but for me, it's the tightest I've ever...
I thought it was pretty tight.
Where I was like joke to joke.
Got the callbacks in there.
I got shit out of there. I took stuff out. And then I started going, the saddest thing is that I'm on year 20 and for the first time was like, oh, this topic matches that topic.
Yeah.
They should live as neighbors.
Yeah.
That is the saddest.
It's a major breakthrough, dude.
It is.
I mean, I flew by the seat of my pants for years. When was the first organized special? You know, my structuring, my discipline around putting together a special came out of a deep resentment of Mike Birbiglia.
And, right. When it can be so specific.
Yeah. It's like, hey, he puts it together. What am I, a fucking idiot? So,
but we need that.
Yeah.
When you just said about checking in on where everyone's at and where you stand, you need it.
Well, there's some people that you're like, you don't do what they do.
Yeah.
And those are the people you can enjoy.
Yes.
The people that kind of do what you do, you're like, ah, fuck. So now I got to figure out a way around this fucking guy.
Yeah.
But you do that in your mind. But when I realized that, you know, callbacks, and I've talked about this before with other comics, like no matter how savvy an audience is, when you do a callback, they're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
That's from before.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it
it's
makes
so satisfying.
It makes a lot of difference because you know it's coming.
Yeah.
Like, here's the one.
Yeah.
I've done callbacks that were too deep. That where they didn't make the connection.
Right.
You were close on the last bit.
Yeah.
It was close.
I know. There's a little bit of time gap.
Yeah.
That time gap is very, it's like surfing. It's very delicate. Yeah, one wrong move.
Yeah, because, you know, when you, and you closed on it, and there was part of me that's sort of like a little far down the line.
I know.
But I didn't, but like, I know the joke was there, but it was a little too big an arc to be like, oh shit.
I know.
It was more of like, oh.
I've had that with, closing with that joke.
Yeah.
Because I've had that joke a while, and I was like, it's going at the end. And if it doesn't get anything, because that gap is so delicate.
I did it on End Times Fun. I did a callback that no one fucking registered. And that was my, okay, good night, I guess.
Yeah. I was like, if no one gets it, I go, I'll give a thank you, and it'll be a less funny ending and a more sincere one, and then we'll just edit out the other shit.
Yeah, I just, I don't... What I'm excited about, really, because I don't know what the kids are doing, and I don't know, you know, really what's happening out there other than, you know, I know what's happening with a few people, but there is, you lean into the filth, which is great.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that seems to have gone by the wayside in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I guess it was always sort of like Working Blue, and I talked about this with Jacqueline Novak, too. You know, that it was always sort of this liability for, you know, club work when you didn't have a name for yourself.
Right.
But I don't, you know, I'm sure there are monsters out there working filthy.
Yeah.
But to do it in a smart way and to keep doing it, to say, you know, come and fuck as much as you did and explicitly address come and fucking in the way that you can, where it's not like this guy's, for some reason you can just, you know, ride this line of being a complete pervy fucking filthy fuck, but people are like, that's his Rory.
Well, I think it's the intent. I think because people can tell I'm not saying it because I want it to shock them.
Right.
And I think if my goal was to shock them, I don't think I would get as much forgiveness with the topic, because I think people were like, well, anyone can just shock us. What's your point? And I think because it is coming from a real opinion in a real place, because I know it is like a harsh topic to hear, but I think I also address it like, we're all adults. We all think about this shit.
Well, yeah, but that's, I used to think that way too. It's like, you know, we've all had our pants off probably last night. Somebody's still got cum on their dick.
Exactly.
Today, room.
On their way to this. That's how good their life is.
But then it just becomes this thing where, you know, there's still this weird resistance. And I don't know what you felt in the room, but it seemed like they were there the whole time.
I think so. I think...
I never like audience shots because you're sort of like, are they laughing? I can't...
No.
That lady up front is, but the one next door is not.
I know. I never want the audience shots. And I always say, that's why we specifically lit kind of behind their heads on the first, because I go, if we have to see them at all, and I don't mind it, but I go, I'd just rather be silhouettes. I don't want to have someone's facial expression get to be in my thing.
Yeah, well, no, that was such an 80s thing. It seems like everyone's moved away from that.
Yeah.
Because it was the idea was that you used it for cutting purposes.
Yeah.
But you don't really need that if you have 9 cameras.
I know. There's so many cameras now, you're like, we've got it.
Yeah,
we've
got someone's
something
got
we
it.
Can cut.
Yeah,
we have a wide that's far enough.
And you don't have to have that one haircut in there 3 times.
That's
there's
right.
that lady again.
Yeah.
But when you were working that stuff out, I mean, were there nights where you'd lose them in the middle of any of that?
Sometimes, but like you say, like there's kind of a pleasure in that too. Like, and I think that's what the nights where you go up and you go, all right, I'm going to talk about cum.
Yeah.
Oh, and I am losing them. And I'm up here for 20 more minutes. So I've got to get them back. And I think when you figure out how to do that, it then makes it the next time
it's the best.
More seamless. Because you're like, oh, I just talked about cum and I've already lost an audience before. I already know how to quickly get them back.
Yep.
And you just kind of,
and then go back to the cum.
Yeah, exactly.
To give them a break.
The stuff people want to talk about. In today's world, the bigger issues.
but you cover that, too, in the whole religion segment. But, I mean, it's very specific because it seems like you chose, you know, these two topics that are, you know, historically taboo. You would think they'd be less taboo now, but they're always going to be a little weird because people are, you know, people or whatever. But, I mean, the religion stuff, that comes from a real place because, you know, you went to church.
Yes.
But it's a long piece.
Yeah.
All of that. So like, what is it, 20 minutes, 25 minutes?
A lot of that, that actually grew out of the tour. The tour didn't really start there. And when I would go on stage, it would really start at the cheating stuff.
Oh, you'd go on stage there and say, and then, who's going to fuck me?
Yeah. And then truly in Phoenix, this is in April, late April, I went on stage. I was about to go on stage. And for whatever reason, I tucked my shirt in. And I looked everybody in the green room and I said, I know this looks like a little strange. I go, but I got to admit, this does feel very comfortable.
Yeah.
And it just inspired this desperate need for me to address that on stage, like almost to the audience.
Talking
like, I know what I look like, but I need you to know. And then just kind of Christian and this came out and like some things came out. And I was like, oh, I do have religion jokes that aren't a part of this, but this in kind of gets me to it. And then I just kind of kept trying it. And then eventually I put a blazer on and I go, oh, this accents it even more. You know, this is like, and it just kind of, it grew out of that. And so these religious jokes that I've had and I've wanted to do, I debated. I go, is it weird to talk about something like this right away? But when I would do it on the tour, I was like, people are laughing.
Sure.
I go, so I think this decision isn't mine. Yeah. Clearly, it's fine to jump into. But
sure.
I will say it wasn't a goal. It's just kind of something I landed on. And I was like, this keeps working.
And
it's all because I tucked my shirt in for one show in Phoenix that it just exploded this whole other start to the show. And it wasn't my intent.
So what do you think that was? It was like going back to your childhood, getting ready to go to church or something?
It was that, and it was like just saying that, I randomly tucking it in, going, I look more Christian. And that, like getting a laugh, I was like, all right, there's something there. There's something in that. But yeah, we debated it. I debated it with like my tour manager, Grant. He was like, dude, it's really funny. But I was like, yeah, but is that a weird... I go, if I go out and I go, I'm probably going to cheat on my wife tonight, that feels like a more topic sentence that gets people sitting forward going, all right, go on.
Yeah.
I go, but there's something I kind of enjoy if I talk about religion and then I act like that's not even really the show yet.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
Like it's an opening band for myself.
Yes. I like that trick. I've done that where you do 15 minutes and you're like, okay, here we go. Let's get started.
Exactly. And it feels
But
so
you do
good.
That when you riff.
Yeah.
Right. Because when you do like just kind of like a Largo show or a riff show, you can dick off, and then you're like, all right, let's get to this.
Or you're on
jokes.
The road and you do something local that gets a big laugh,
right, here
and
we
then
go.
Suddenly you're 10 minutes deep and making fun of whatever.
And party is like, great, there goes 10 minutes.
I can't tell if that's a good thing or a bad thing that I'm constantly, all right, we've done, I'm 40 minutes closer to getting off of work.
Yeah. Or, what's even better is when you look at your watch or whatever you're timing with and you're like, oh my God, that's, I'm almost done.
Yeah. Oh, when you feel that, because I think strangely, we always think we don't have enough time.
Well,
and
some
then
people,
you're 20 minutes in and you're like, I haven't even really.
Yeah, got
and
going.
I got two bits that are each going to be 5 to 10. And then you're like, oh, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Or you suddenly perform.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. But isn't it great when you've done like an hour 10 and you're like, I still got four big ones left and I'm not even going to do them.
It's the weird. And your head's like, they don't even get to know. You're like, well, that was the whole point of writing it. So
that they could not even. Tonight. Not tonight. We've gone too long.
I mean, is that the equivalent of a band deciding to not play
their hits?
They're like almost arrogant.
I don't know.
It.
You judge in that moment. Like, has it been a full show?
Yeah.
But also, when I keep going, like, I know, like, I always forget because I don't know. I don't necessarily think I'm doing it for the audience ever. But like, I'll go long and then I'll realize, like, these people, you know, have probably had enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Even if they're still with me.
Yeah.
It's a long night.
Right.
And I've got to get away from that.
Well, I think even if you start putting yourself in the audience and you're like, would I be ready to go?
I wouldn't even go to the show.
I think that all the time.
Who are these fucking people?
I sometimes go on stage and I go, well, I have to be here.
Sometimes when I walk into a comedy room, the smaller ones, not like necessarily a theater or something, but if I go to the Comedy Store, I'm like, why do these people come here?
I know. You think it.
I always think it. It's like, would I ever think of this as an option? But we're so far away from it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like, what am I? Like, I'm like 40 years almost far away from doing comedy.
Yeah.
But like before that, when I was like 20, would I be like, let's go to a comedy show?
Hungry to go like
to a comedy show?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I wonder. I think that too all the time.
How about when you start out and, you know, you get there and it's one of those nights where there's like 15 people and they're kind of spread out. You're like, you guys even want to do this? I mean, the responsibility of sitting in a room full of 12 people?
Your whole career, when people say, well, don't get mad at the people who showed up, you always want to tell them. It's always a comic that's giving you
the
advice.
Yeah.
And they're not wrong.
Yeah.
But you do want to say to them, like, well, I have to be mad at somebody. And the other people that I'm actually mad at didn't show up.
Yeah.
So who am I supposed to yell at?
So these people are going to pay for my lack of popularity.
They're going to pay for each not bringing 10 people. It's on them for not promoting me better.
Yeah. I think you have the same instinct. Like, I have this instinct where I'm doing really well. And then I have this moment where I'm like, now it's time to push them away.
Yeah. Now, do you do it because you are curious, can you get them back? There's a little bit of that in me. When I decide I want to lose them a little bit,
yeah,
I do. My brain is a little, that narcissism of like, I bet I'm good enough to pull. I can push them all away and bring them back. I've had to learn a lot that sometimes I can't.
Well, you push them too far.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think there is some part of us that knows after a certain point of doing it that you can get them back.
Yeah.
Like, that's how you write new material. It's like, I'm going to put this thing in and it's not going to go well.
Yeah.
And then I'll address that and then we'll move on.
Yeah.
And it'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I used to do a joke on stage where I'm like, when I do that thing and I go, this is what I like to do in the audience. I like to bring them in, push them away, bring them in, push them away. It's a little dynamic I call dad. And, and that always sweetens
it.
But talking about those jokes where, you know, you like them, but they never work. Like, I have a couple jokes where these jokes are like, they're brain crushers. So, like, I love doing the joke, but it never gets a laugh. There's two jokes that never get a laugh.
Yeah.
Really. They get something.
Currently?
Yeah. But it's not really a laugh.
Sure.
And one of them can tip a good number of people.
Oh, okay.
Like, I'm doing this joke about how I think Christianity is at its core a little bit anti-Semitic.
Okay.
And I go, I'll explain. Because the core idea of Christianity really is that the only really good Jew is a dead Jew. and doesn't.
Yeah, it's a lot to take.
But see, I don't see it that way. I just see it as
the phrase dead Jew turns people off?
Yeah, I guess.
How bizarre.
But all I'm thinking is that, like, this is a structurally perfect joke.
Yeah.
You know, it goes where it's supposed to go.
Yeah. But I think, does it upset you, too? Because you know what you're trying to say, and yet you almost are like, wait, are you all thinking I'm the bad guy? I'm trying to point out the villain.
Right.
And you're acting like I'm the one that thinks it.
Well, what I've landed on, it's just like people have just never really looked at Jesus like that.
Yeah.
So if you got a room full of people that weren't anticipating looking at Jesus in a different way,
right, yeah,
or their religion.
That's true, yeah.
That it's just sort of a brain bender.
Yeah.
You know, and the other one I can't make work is about, you know, when you get older and you have a family, you realize no one ever tells you just how much it's going to cost to put two parents through dying.
Yeah, there's something about how they have to pay for college. You go, well, you pay them back.
Right.
You're going to cover some costs when they kick the bucket.
Well, that should be the second part of it. But, like, it's just, I think the, what do you call it, the mislead, I think it's good, but people are just like, no, God.
They just think about their lives.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to have to do this.
Yeah, or they're just like, what?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Why can't I just lighten it up?
Well, you could be like, hey, the good news is you don't incur those costs a second time.
That's right.
It can only happen the one time.
Yeah, and then there's also like
step family, you don't have to do anything for them.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Or just that's true. Well, you could deliver that.
You do it one time, you're good.
But the other thing is, like, you know, you put him through dying, you get nothing back other than the satisfaction that it's over. It's over.
And it's finally done.
Done. It's finally done. So, like, what is it? Like, I can't remember because I know we talked years ago, but why is the Southern come in and out?
I mean, that's where I grew up.
Right.
And you
stuffed it down?
I kind of stuffed it down, I think, but I don't think I ever really had, like, a Southern accent.
Right.
I think it was just I lived in that space with the Southern culture.
It comes in and out a little bit.
It comes
right?
in and out very instinctually. Strangely, so does like sort of a New York accent. And I truly don't know
what
why.
That is.
Like the Southern one, you kind of make sense. The New York one, I don't fully understand. But I got to say,
you're just a vessel, man.
I'm a vessel. I started doing it when I went up at UCB. This is like when I moved here.
What year was that?
I didn't have any new material. I want to say like 2010.
Really?
And I went up and I didn't have any new material. And I was like, and I think I had already performed there. And I kind of felt weird being like, I don't want to go up and do it. Like, you know, you're early to LA. You want to crush every time you're trying to establish yourself.
You want new material.
And so for some reason, I went up, did the old jokes, but I was like, I'm just going to do it as this Southern guy.
Yeah.
And very quickly, I was like, oh, just talking like this. My wording is becoming different. My intent of why I'm doing the joke. It like sort of an actor thing kind of kicked in where I was like, oh, just changing this one thing.
Yeah.
makes it like I didn't even really write this joke. This guy did.
Yeah.
And I found very quickly, like, I could get away with saying almost anything because people interpreted this guy as like, he doesn't really know what he's saying. You know what he's, he's offensive, but he doesn't know it.
It's a character.
Exactly. Oh. And so it kind of was like this revelation of like, oh, you can have material, but if you kind of can put like a character with it.
Yeah.
You kind of can keep doing it in different ways. Right. I try to, I mean, I don't play music, but I always try to think about music. And I'm like, you know, jam bands must find themselves and say, like, yeah, we're going to play this song, but right in the middle, we're going to do it different. We're not going to jam the same way we usually jam or whatever.
Because that's what all these dancing idiots want.
Yes. He's drugged out. So I try to think of it that way too, where I'm like, oh, well, what if tonight?
Yeah.
This made sense. And I got to say, now it no longer feels like conscious decision making. Sometimes it just feels like, I don't know where I did a New York accent.
Right.
And the only thing that I will consciously be aware of if I feel like I'm doing it too much.
Right.
If I'm like, oh, I'm kind of becoming a one trick thing. I'm going to this voice.
Sure.
And that voice did get a laugh.
Yeah.
But now, then I start hating myself because I go, oh, is the voice getting a laugh? So my writing actually isn't any.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So
and then I get mad about it.
Yeah. No rest in the mind.
That's right.
But that's the weirdest fucking thing, like what we were talking about before. Is like there's so many, like I've got people that like just the special I put out a year ago, whatever it was, a year ago January. Like people are like, you can do that bit? I'm like, I don't even remember it.
I know.
It's like but that seems wrong somehow.
I don't think so. I think it's right. I think if it was music, like, yeah, you have to know it.
No, but here's the thing that always gets me, and I'm not going to do anything to fix it.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, I'm not that famous. You're not that famous. So unless they're there to see you, most people don't know your bits. Mm-hmm. They don't know. Like, I've got bits from before anyone give a shit about who I was that I worked a year on.
Yeah, yeah.
And I did them once on, like, John Oliver's stand-up special.
Yeah.
On Comedy Central.
Yeah.
And it was a huge bit.
Yeah.
And I fucking retired it.
Right.
That's it.
I think that's right, though.
No, I know. It keeps us lively.
I mean, I'm not going to ever fix it either. I'm in the same boat. I forget it. And like, I sometimes think I could try to remember it, or I could try to evolve and see what else
to
talk about.
But there's this idea. It's like, why not just the greatest hits record? You know, I just go back and do them all fresh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like Taylor Swift's doing all her records again.
It's not a bad idea.
Just to do like to redo lost jokes of your own.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or even other people.
Sure,
just
why
take
not?
It.
Like, just do cover it.
They won't know.
Marin covers Hicks.
So far back.
Oh, yeah.
We live in a time now where people go, that's a Bill Hicks joke. And you could just go, so? And it literally would mean nothing to anyone at all. The punishment of stealing is now, it's their zero accountability.
Yeah, and so many of those jokes are like, not Hicks per se, but like, well, people influence people. And you see, as you get older in this business, you're like, I know that joke kind of.
Yeah.
And I know this style of delivery.
The pattern, yeah.
Yeah, you know, a delivery system. But sometimes they weren't. In you know, you watch Bargatze enough, you're like, I gotta slow down.
That's him plowing through the hours,
yeah,
and they're not shit. Like, it's great, and then you're like, oh, fuck, I gotta go. That's for me. That's when I go, I gotta
work.
I need to, I should be at the mics, I should be working on one. New
what's
thing.
He do, one a year ish?
I think so. He's about to, I just saw an announcement, he's about to tape another one. But yeah, I think like.
Well, he's got such a like, but his
every 2 years,
his cadence, like he's one of these rare guys that has found this portal that's uniquely his.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's all because of his unique build, and his point of view.
Yeah.
So, and it's also fairly, you know, most of it's really observational.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I thought that bit he did about the nuances between, you know, new Christians and old Christians, I'd never heard anything like that.
Yeah.
Before. Everyone's heard about Jews, you know, and you know, and certain Muslims talk about their difference. But I never heard someone be specific about a type of Christianity.
At a time in your life,
that
too.
Came about in the 80s. Like, right. You know, when all these people were like refinding Christ.
The most Christian you can be.
That's right. Yeah. Jesus had a better time than me.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. And he's a worker, man.
But also that's a revelation too, in terms of like, you know, watching and keeping up and seeing who's doing what. Like Nate's a great example of finding your own lane, knowing that you don't have to talk fast. You don't have to do act out.
He can't change
it. You don't have to curse. You don't have to have problematic material that maybe pushes. You know, we all are who we are. But you get to see someone like that. You go, oh, he's 100% clean, talking about relatable stuff. And it couldn't be more on top of the world.
Yeah.
And it is refreshing. It's like,
sure. And here we are, you know, you're talking about coming and whale dicks.
Well, I also think that it's, and I go back to this all the time, but I also do think it's a little bit musical. Like, what is the music that you like, and what is their persona, and what is their type of philosophy on what they do? And then I think when you come from that place, you know, the art that you and I do is spoken word, like, for the most part. And so because of that, we're more closer to that music that we like, you know?
Also, I think it's like, you know, Nate is that guy. You know, whatever struggles he struggles and has struggles with now or has struggled with, it's in the context of, you know, where he comes from culturally, where he comes from spiritually, and, you know, his family.
Yeah.
You know, he's that guy.
Yeah.
He's not making anything up.
Oh, that's my favorite part about the whole thing.
Yeah.
That it's very real.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, like, he blew my mind years ago. When I first saw him at Grand Rapids doing showcases for new talent, I was like, who the fuck is this guy? I'm walking around following him. Like, what is it? That's the guy.
Yeah.
No one, does anyone notice
that's
the guy? He opened for me at Carnegie Hall, and I think he did better than me.
Yeah. I would, someone said, Nate's going on first. I go, no. No, he's not.
Well, I had a big breakthrough in my career, and I'll share it with you because you'll understand. I was doing a set at Largo. It was my night. And Judd Apatow wanted to run some jokes for something. And I'm like, okay. And then Flanny's like, Sandler wants to come by. I'm like, what?
Oh, no.
And then, like, Nate texts me. I'm like, I'm done with Ari's show. Can I come by there? And I'm like, okay.
Like, oh, shit. So
it's like Judd.
You're really looking at your set list now.
But the weird thing is, I kind of didn't.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm like, all right, dude. You know, so I like these guys. You know, I always thought that Adam was mad at me. So, like, he wants to do my show, fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there was this moment where I'm like, I want Adam to hear this joke. And, like, I'm like, that's new.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Nate went on. I'm like, fine. And then I went on and did my 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was not a problem. I thought that as a great victory.
Yeah.
I did terribly. But I'm kidding.
I bombed, but me.
But you know,
they didn't get it.
For me, it was a big breakthrough. I wasn't upset that they were there. Did not do well. Just couldn't follow any of them.
Was fine with it. Just fine with it. I've never been back. Haven't gone back. But no, I think there's also that thing where, and we forget this all the time. I don't know that this ever goes away. You get reminded of it. But the following people.
Oh, it's real.
Where you just go, oh, yeah, the audience doesn't necessarily want the same shit over
and
over.
That's right.
So when you get out there, they're pretty grateful for a new flavor.
Sure.
Then it's just a matter of like, well, have you done enough of the work to have a point?
Yeah.
And then I think that you're fine.
Kind of.
I didn't used to think that. I used to think, oh, this guy is doing this. So I got to do that. And then I bomb because I don't do that.
But that's,
you know?
But that you earned that pretty early on.
Very early.
Yeah,
and then many times after.
Yeah, you can't just jump into somebody's
their
energy,
cadence,
their river.
Yeah.
But the truth is that, you know, if someone kills before you, you're going to have to suck it up for a few minutes.
Yeah, oh yeah.
A lot of times.
Yeah.
Unless you take a hit at them on the way off.
Yeah.
Is, I do.
It's questionable material. Yeah.
You got to do it sometimes.
Yeah.
But there's some guys that do it, like, you know, I'll do it to, I won't take a shot totally, but like I'll do a thing where it's sort of like, all right, that was fun, now let's shift into cranky Jew energy.
Yeah.
And that's good enough.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you remember the person you followed and tried to, the first time you tried to just jump on their wave?
One sits in my mind very clearly. I don't remember his last name. It was Paul. It was his first name, and it was just the two of us kind of co-headlining in Austin. So it was either, I think it was South by Southwest.
Yeah.
And playing a venue that wasn't necessarily great for stand-up.
Oh, that, the Something Follies?
No, it was not even that. It was like a bar, like a staircase was kind of in the way.
Oh, I know that place. Was it partially outdoors?
It might have been.
No,
but he went up first, and I think we had just flipped a quarter, or someone had just said, this is the order. But we didn't know, I didn't know him. I don't think he knew me.
Yeah.
And he just went up, and it was just set up punch. And not like It wasn't just that it was his rhythm.
Yeah.
The jokes were great. I mean, right. I was in the back laughing, and in my head, I was just like, well, I'm going to go up and do my thing.
Yeah.
But I went up there and very quickly was like kind of still in his rhythm because I really watched his set and I really enjoyed it. And I think I was like, oh, wait, what am I? This isn't how I talk. And, you know, then you...
Were you bombing?
I was bombing.
Yeah.
But then I like pointed out the bombing, which gives you a little bit of grace when you can say, hey, I'm aware.
Sure.
But... it wasn't like I was able to then recover with any kind of material because, you know, I think what I was talking about was now I hadn't built any rapport. So
right.
now when I talk about either, you know, I've always talked about drugs and sex and stuff or politics. So the moment I say it, it's almost like, ah, this is, I don't even know who you are. And now you're making
me. We forgave him and now it's still not good.
That's exactly how I thought. I kind of was like, all right, I have to do 30 more minutes. So I'll just do that and then I'll get out of here. But it's one of those lessons where you go, oh yeah, you can't think about someone else's rhythm. You just got to like it and not try to do it.
It took me so long to just be able to, you know, kind of live through mediocre audiences.
Yeah.
Just to where you're up on stage and you're like, I'm doing all right, but this is the level they're meeting me at. And I'm just going to have to take that.
Yeah.
There's nothing I can do to
turn it. You can't adjust it. You can't step it up.
Sometimes at the Comedy Store, there's like half a room that they're like, I don't know, are you not settled in? Are you at the right place?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my God.
Well, sometimes out here, I feel like the struggle can be you're not famous. Like I go up and they're like, oh,
really?
I don't know. I knew this guy, but I don't know this guy. And I feel like their vibe is, I just want to know who's next and be excited because I think there's this want to tell people who you saw.
I don't know. The Comedy Store.
So and so came out.
Well, yeah, that happens. But like a lot of times, though, like the Comedy Store is a lot of people now that are good comics, but they're not famous yet.
Right.
And the audiences are great. They get excited when they see someone famous. But then you know, over time, you watch a lot of famous people just do okay.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what when I first moved to LA, that was kind of my headspace, and it kind of made me angry. And so I didn't, like, make this major push to try to be at the Improv or the Factory or the Store.
I don't do those
often. I don't try to, like, get over there because I just go, there's a lot of, like, you know, I would go to Tiger Lily and be like, oh, this is
fun.
I do
Tiger Lily.
No one paid to get in, so the expectation is it's just going to be whatever it is. And, like, I don't know, I felt like a greater freedom as opposed to, hey, these people paid for tickets, parking.
Sure. You didn't want to do your job.
Didn't want to do at all. I wanted to be able to go in.
Yeah, you wanted a casual approach.
I want to go in if it's bad, be like, what are you? You didn't pay.
Yeah. I'm just fucking around. I don't owe you anything.
It's a playground for me.
Tigerly. But it's so weird because with all those spaces, which is where I'm sure I met you at those different places, like I always resented it because I always come out of the clubs.
And it was just
sort of like, why are we even in this venue?
Yeah.
This fucking sound sucks. There's nobody sitting directly in front of me.
Yeah.
I got to play to the sides.
It's a makeshift space.
Yeah. And it's there are people there that didn't know it was a show.
Yeah.
That was always the thing about alternative comedy.
Yeah.
It's like, well, they're going to stay. Don't make them stay. Just because they ate dinner here.
There's nothing better than the TVs just getting turned off.
Yeah.
I'd be like, wait, what do you do? It's the fourth quarter. Like, but there's a spoken word event where 10 different people are going to offer 10 different perspectives.
And eight of them are amateurs.
All of them do not have enough money to even actually be at this venue on a regular night.
And they're amateurs. They're just starting out.
No one is pro.
Yeah.
Some people is their first time.
Why don't you do, are you passed at the Store?
I've never really put in the effort to try to be.
Was that?
I should do that. I feel like I should make an effort to.
But are those days behind you? You're not gonna.
No, I'm all for it. I mean, the legendary space of the Store. Like, I respect all.
Where are you doing comedy?
I go to Elysian a lot. I'll do shows there. Like, that's where I kind of put this hour, or like got it where it needed to be to start touring it.
Elysian,
Largo,
Elysian,
very similar.
Too intimate.
I kind of love it. I love that Elysian is kind of like a East Side Largo, tiny.
I do Dynasty Typewriter because it's in between Largo and Elysian.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it doesn't feel like okay, it's just me and you guys.
Yeah.
You know, it does feel like a little theater.
Yeah.
Whereas Elysian, it's like you're only four rows deep.
Yeah.
You can see every fucking face.
Yeah.
It's nice. I don't mind it.
I do like clubs too. I feel like there was a time when I first started where people were very like, you either like the alt rooms or you're like the clubs, and it felt like they were battling.
Yeah.
But, you know, I came up listening to comics who were saying, no, you need to be able to play both. And I took that to heart, being like, oh yeah, the clubs out there are not going to be like the alt shows in DC or New York or LA. They're going to be clubs. That's where I'm going to go play.
So you started in alt rooms?
Sort of, yeah. I mean, I started in D.C., and so there was just the D.C. Improv.
Right.
And so you could get booked to do the competition once a month, and you would maybe get to MC.
Right.
So you kind of had to do the bars or the different
alt. Yeah, because I started in clubs, really. And then when the alt thing happened, I guess I was part of it in New York, the Luna Lounge, but I was just there angry and blowing off steam that I couldn't get more work at clubs. That's how my voice came into being.
Yeah.
But I always saw clubs and the alternative spaces. I always felt like if I'd go do Nerd Melt, I'm like, this whole fucking audience is the one person. It's the same, same guy.
Well, I think what I like is that it seems like conditions that are not not so much Nerd Melt, but like a lot of the shows, like Luna Lounge, it's not really conducive to having any kind of live entertainment. That was such a narrow space. There was something that I saw as that I really liked about it, because it was like, well, I do need to have this material.
Yeah.
But it's almost like, but I also sort of have to have the ambiance to try to make it all come together. And I think I got addicted to, oh, this isn't really where a show should happen, and it's not really great for one, but let's see. Yeah. I think I kind of got excited by it.
Well, I think the muscle you build eventually, and I, and the biggest example of it really in terms of where we're at now, in terms of where we can work and where we choose to work is like, you know, I had a choice of doing dates at Stand Up Live in Phoenix or trying a theater in Phoenix. And I always go to Stand Up Live.
Yeah.
Have you been there?
Yes. Yeah.
So that's a club.
Yeah.
And it's definitely a club.
Yeah.
It's a big club.
Yes.
But, you know, but you can feel the club dynamic. Whereas when you're in a theater, specifically for your people, even if it's a club with mostly your people, it still feels, you can't get past the club element.
Yeah.
Whereas a theater, you know, there's no servers, there's no drinks, there's focus. And you have a different type of freedom.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think you really feel it there. But again, a theater is not like an alternative room.
Right.
But there is a choice there on how you want to perform. But because I like doing club work. I did like 6 shows in Portland and it was fine. I was exhausted.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I think that's what this was the first tour where I said, let's do theaters for the most part.
Yeah.
And let's see where we stand. Let's see who shows up. And so it did feel good to see numbers being pretty decent at some of these venues that I thought were probably too big for me.
Yeah.
It was great seeing who actually came out and who saw the show. But I think for me, what I really liked was like, oh, it can really be a different show.
Yeah.
It's like we can really say something about the lights and the music. And like we really get to have the whole space.
Yeah. The whole fucking, even the music bookends were about come.
Yeah. That's right. I used to say that in the show and then it didn't make it in the special. But I think the main thing I liked was, oh, we do the one and then we get out of town.
Yeah.
Like, even if we sold enough to add a second show,
I don't do it.
Which financially is great.
Yeah.
I was still like, I like giving it all here.
I'm like that too.
I like having 24 hours to recharge to do it again.
I don't mind the second show, but I'm not confident
that
it will sell out.
And
then I'm sort of like, for me, it's not even the energy thing. It's like, I'm going to do a full house and kill. And then I'm like, got to go up to a half a house.
Chicago. That was Chicago for me.
The Vic?
NFL. We did Thalia Hall.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's
great.
That's a big, weird place.
I loved it. I was like, oh, this is so cool. Yeah. It's so old. It's so weird. Yeah. Sold out the first show.
Yeah.
And it was so much fun. And then we did half on the second show. And I had these two hecklers. And I literally committed 10 minutes to pretending I was them on stage and what their lives must be like. And while that was very fun and wildly fulfilling, I still was like, oh, everybody didn't really get to see the show that I think is like the show.
Well, that's fun. But that's also fun, too, because like on that second show, you give less of a fuck. You're looser.
You're over it.
Yeah, I mean, especially in clubs.
Right.
Like, I was doing 2 shows a night in Portland, and the second show was, like, loopy.
What'd you do, Helium?
Yeah. I was just working shit out, and I like that town, and I can do a theater there, but I was working out. And you know, it's pretty rewarding in a way to, you know, a lot of times, you can make as much money in a night as you can doing 4 or 5 shows at a club, but a lot of times you can make more at the club.
Yeah.
You just got to be willing to work. And I needed the time. I needed the
well, that's why it
the hours.
Sense. Yeah, yeah.
But that second show always gets weird because I'm tired and I'm a little loopy.
Well, they're a little more drunk too.
Yeah, and then you can sort of feel where that's where things kind of happen, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Thalia Hall, did you get a pair of socks?
I got a pair of socks.
Yeah.
I almost wore them today.
I wish I knew where my Thalia socks were.
When you go to Portland and you're doing the club and you're putting the hour together and you're like, all right, it feels pretty good. There's a lot of chunks in here that are going to exist and they're going to be in the main thing. Like, do you then feel weird if you then put a theater show together and you're coming back to Portland, or do you feel like, hey, everybody who came out, you're probably going to come out again. You're fans. Yeah. You're my people.
I do feel weird.
Do you feel like, oh, they already saw it? Or do you feel like, hey, now you're going to get to see the more concreted version of what I was?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's okay. And like, you know, of course, your agent's always like, it's not going to matter. I'm like, Tindy, me, it will.
It gets in your head. Yeah.
Well, I usually don't do that in Portland. If I'm working out an hour at a club, I usually go like St. Louis. Where's another one? I'll go to Denver.
Yeah.
But a lot of times then I'll go back and do Boulder, but people don't come down from Boulder usually. They think they're going to come. I do get nervous about that. Because then even if people are being nice and they say like, wow, you know, I saw that, that whole set the last time you were here, but it's a lot better now. I'm like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Don't tell me you saw it. No, I said it was better. It doesn't matter.
No, I said it was better. Get away.
Yeah.
so it wasn't good before.
No, is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Well, I try to tell people, I go, if you're a real fan of comedy and comics, I go, you'll never get to go watch your favorite band write the album. You just will never get to
that.
I go, but if you're a real fan of Marc Maron, you can go into the kitchen and watch him make the meal if you want to.
Right.
And then you then get to see what that looks like when it hits the table.
Sure.
So you do get two versions of a show.
Right.
And the hardcore fans, I think they are like that.
And then they watch the special.
And they want to watch you. I think real comedy fans want to see almost your first set once the special has dropped. They want to be like, what is
blank
page
now?
And you don't have shit to say?
Right.
What does that look like?
Yeah, but then you're going back with the 15 minutes you didn't put in the special. And they're like, nah, fuck, this is a...
Oh, yeah. I've got this. That's all I've got right now.
Of course. Where else are you going to start? I think there's a chunk of material that I've not done for two specials. That's just kind of hanging out.
It just doesn't make the team.
Yeah, and it's back. It's how we start
every time. It's Rudy from Notre Dame.
Exactly.
He's not going to get on the team.
He's reliable, though. You know he's not going to
get on. He's good at practice.
He's going to get you through. He's going to get you through practice.
He helps get the other bits better for the game.
Exactly.
That's true.
So, now, with your wife... How's she with the everything?
She's good. She's good with it.
Yeah.
There was a time when
good
I told
sport.
Her, she's a good sport. Yeah. I there was a time with this where when this was coming together, I told her one day in the kitchen, I go, you're more a part of this show than you've ever been in the past. And she was asking why, and I go, I think you should just see the show. I go, it's not like, you know, these things are these. I go, we all know that jokes have to come from a thing.
Yeah.
I go, but I don't know that it's necessarily funny if I went on stage and said, my wife and I are really happy together.
Right.
I go, I am. I go, but that doesn't make me laugh.
Yeah.
And I don't really care if someone else is.
You do it after.
I'm like, give me some nitty gritty that you kind of don't want to talk about.
Yeah.
And I was like, so I go, that's there, and I have to exaggerate it. I go, and she knows the deal. But she has come to see it three times. She was at the taping for the special. And it's funny because she'll usually be with her friends.
Yeah.
And I'll say a joke, and she says all her friends will look at her to see her respond first.
Yeah.
Before they will laugh.
Yeah.
But they also have pulled me aside and been like, you know, she's laughing the whole time. And I'm like, I have to, like, at no point am I giving a confession.
Right.
I go, I think these are jokes too. I think it's playful and it's fun and it's silly.
Yeah. But you put her through it up there.
Oh, she goes through it. Yeah. she knows what she signed up for.
but I keep thinking about that. Like, if I got on stage and said, well, I'm not married, but like if I said, like, you know, tonight's night, I'm going to fuck around my girlfriend, if anyone's game, my audience, who are mostly, you know, middle-aged women, are going to be like, you fucking monster.
I know.
But the thing is like, you know, when you do it, they're suspending their disbelief or something.
Yeah.
You know, they're not taking you for your word necessarily, even though you do ride an edge with it.
Yeah.
But you don't. You're not coming at them with like the menace of like, you know, we're gonna really do it.
Yeah. And I don't think it comes across that way. But I think it's sold enough to where. Because I would like someone to be like, I don't know. I mean, was that real?
Sure.
Like, I would love it if someone would be like, I don't know what was real or not. And I'd be that's the shit I love.
Yeah.
The comedy that I've seen when it's been absurd.
Yeah.
And Todd Glass really opened my eyes to this. The first time I ever saw him, didn't know who he was. Saw him at the DC Improv. And I had a moment where I go, I actually don't really know what he's fucking up.
Yeah.
I don't know what is the joke. I don't know what's real.
Yeah.
And it was the fastest hour I'd ever seen that when he said, all right, I got to get out of here. I thought it had been 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Looked at my watch. This is pre everyone having a cell phone. Looked at my watch and I was like, oh, it's been an hour. He's been up there an hour.
Yeah.
And I think that's always stuck with me. Like the audience doesn't get to have there is no privilege of like, you get to know what's real.
Yeah.
I hate that.
Yeah.
I don't want that. I want to be fucking confused.
Yeah. See,
by
I think,
all art. I want to be like confused and I want to like it, but I don't want someone to just give me reality and give me the answers.
Yeah.
It's not fun.
I think I'm too real. That's the problem.
Okay.
This is about me, obviously. This whole conversation is just me talking to you, comparing myself to you.
I'm finding a lot of me in it. So, yeah. I'm finding a lot of relation.
Like I guess I'm working stuff out there, but I know the jokes are there. I just think if there's one place I need to go is I think I could be a little goofier.
Sure.
And a little more engaged with pop culture. I have a joke that I was doing for a couple months and it was fine the way it was. And one night at the Comedy Store, Chris Rock was in the back of the room watching me and I get off and you know, he gives me a tag, and I'm like, oh, that's pretty good. And it's a huge laugh.
Yeah.
Like, every time. I'm like, I guess that's why he's Chris Rock.
Yeah.
But it's just an aside.
Yeah.
But I would never have thought of it.
Right, yeah.
Because I don't have the cultural reference.
Yeah.
And then, but between me and you.
into these microphones? You got it.
Into these microphones. Like, for years, I've been carrying around with me the knowledge that, like, years ago in New York, it was before I got sober, so this is like 25 years ago probably, Catch a Rising Star had moved, and it was at this new location. It wasn't a great location. And I was playing with this idea about, you know, planned obsolescence, you know, which is they make things to break, so you buy the same thing again.
Yeah.
And I had some these ideas going through my head, but no one gave a fuck about me or who I was. And Rock was doing some joke about, you know, AIDS eventually just getting to a point where it's just like having a cold. Like, it'll be that normalized
in
some way. Medicine. The medicine, right? And after he got off, I told him, I said, look, you know, there's no money in a cure. And that became this big bit.
Yeah,
his,
yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So after he gave me the dumb punchline.
yeah.
You know, I texted him. And I'm like, thanks, man. It works great. He's like, yeah, I'm glad it works. And I'm like, and I don't know if you remember this.
I would feel this. I can relate to this. Yeah.
Just a heads up.
Just, I don't know if you remember this.
But it's not really quite petty.
Yeah.
But you wanted recognition.
Yeah.
And I told him that I gave him that. And all he wrote back was, you're a good man.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
You're like, I want you to. We're even.
Yeah.
It's one to one now.
Yeah. Because I knew he probably wouldn't remember. Right. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, like, I didn't take anything from you.
Yeah.
This is barter.
This is a long time coming. You should have wrote back debt paid. Debt fulfilled.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? When someone gives you a tag like that and it crushes,
yeah.
You feel fine? You're like.
No, I feel like I should quit.
Really?
No. It doesn't happen that often.
Right, yeah.
And that, it's just a passing bit. It's a line.
Yeah.
You know, people will throw tags at you, but a lot of times they don't resonate. But
yeah,
because it was Chris, and I didn't even understand the reference, you know, because it's a reference to a TV show that I really didn't watch. So but it works.
Right.
And I'm like, fine, you know, people write jokes. I'm writing all my own jokes. The guy wants to give me a tag.
Yeah.
Rhodes gave me a tag once.
I think it depends where it comes from.
Sure.
And then you go, yeah, right, you can't,
because
you're never going to be out there. If you could sit out there and watch you might be like, oh, I can
I can
tell. It's a whole other thing.
Oh, this should be yours.
But
be
it's
a,
just not possible.
No. And it's like some of these guys at that level, they sit with five writers.
Yeah.
And they go through their shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And they figure it out.
God, wouldn't that be great?
Not really. I don't know if I could do it.
I would love five writers.
You would?
Just throw me material. Be like, all right, let's go play around with it. I don't think I would get so upset about it. I have always wondered, because I do feel a purist element that I should be writing it.
Yeah,
me too. I should be doing it.
Right.
And that sits there.
Yeah.
But I do sometimes think, like, if there were three friends going, what about this as a topic? I think I'd be like, yeah, all right. I'll go play around with that.
But that's different.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done monologue jokes.
Oh, you
jokes.
Mean if they're writing it specifically?
Right. I've done monologue jokes.
Yeah.
Where, you know, like I've done shows on the radio and I've done, you know, a TV show where you got writers who do jokes.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
Like monologue jokes.
Yeah.
And they're just like, you know, I'm going to share some math problems with you.
Yeah.
And all the answers are correct.
Yeah.
you know what I mean?
Right.
But if you're talking about something and then somebody gives you an idea to broaden it, I mean, that's the.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Because that's what we're doing on our own.
Right.
Is that you and I, if you write on stage, you've got this idea and then you're just banking on, you know, the cosmos,
yeah,
to deliver something,
yeah,
in the moment that becomes part of your thing, that keeps expanding. It becomes a whole world, you know. And it if someone could suggest that, how do you go further with this? You know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But you seem to do that on your own.
I think so. I mean, I definitely have, you know, when you're on the road with people or you're doing spots, like there are people that'll come up and go, hey, because here's a great example, and I don't mind throwing this out there, but I have a callback in this special,
yeah,
like a physical one where I take the highlighter back out of my
head.
And it was a comic who came to see me working the hour at UCB Franklin,
yeah,
and he goes, you know, it could be funny if when you're actually reading the letter, you go back and highlight it, and I didn't even try it out. I go, I already know that will absolutely crush. I already know it. I'm picturing it.
Yeah,
it will 100%.
Sure.
Yeah. Work.
Yeah.
And I did it on the next show, whenever that was.
Yeah.
Message that dude back and I go, it crushed.
Yeah.
I go, great. Absolutely great.
Yeah.
I was like, thank you so
much.
Yeah.
If there's anything I can do for you.
Yeah. If 25 years from now, you need anything from me.
Well, those are the kind of things that you take. You don't want to, you know what I mean? Whether it's
but I know what you mean. Like if someone said, hey, you should talk about this, like bigger topic and stuff. You are almost like, I write the albums.
Yeah, that's right.
I got it.
That's right. What if
I
you
know.
Were, or a lot of times they're like, what if you go this direction?
Yeah.
And you're like, well, that wouldn't be me at all.
Yeah.
But I appreciate the
But
input.
I get it because there is that purist element. And I know I keep saying this over and over, but I really do think it goes back to music because when you find out a musician or a band writes all of it,
yeah,
you like that.
Yeah. And
when you find out someone else wrote it, you go, it does sound good.
Yeah.
But it's missing that one piece where I want them to have
right. But
come
there's,
up with
but
it.
There's also cover music and, you know, cover songs
sure.
and they do that. But and again, like usually this conversation would be just like, you know, has anyone, you know, given you a tag and be like, yeah, a couple in my life. The only reason I'm talking about it is because it was Chris Rock.
I know.
Gave me the tag and I'm willing to say it works really good
because
Chris Rock gave it to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's what I mean. You got a professional chef in the back going.
Sure, yeah. Hey,
you got salt
spice
right
it
there.
Up.
And go,
yeah,
all right.
And Tom Rhodes. But honestly, those are
You were about to say Tom Rhodes gave you one.
But that was years ago. But those are the only two I really remember because they really, you know, they kind of relieved the tension.
Yeah.
I can't remember the one that fucking Tom gave me. It was good.
I'm not going to lie. I love it. I love if I'm watching a show.
Yeah.
I love trying to think of tags. I love trying to think of right and left turns they could go. If it's a comic that I always try to read someone too. If I'm friends with them, then I go, dude, you should think about this.
Yeah, no, I did.
If I don't know them that well, I always try to feel it out because I know some people get offended by that. Like, I don't fucking need your shit. I'm like, I get it. I totally get it. But there are times when I'm like, if I come up, I'm like, look, I don't know, but my instinct is this would fucking work.
Sure, if you have that relationship with them. It was really kind of great because I gave one to Neil Brennan and he's like Mr. Writer guy. And he's always going to, you know, like, dude, what if you did? Like, he's a writer.
Yeah, right.
And I remember I pointed something out to him, and he's like, oh, yeah, that'd be good. I'm like, ah, that's a win. Then literally the other night, the Elysian, I did a benefit, and, you know, Pepitone went before me. And I had a note for him. I had two notes for him. I go, you know, because he's doing this thing Yeah, who knows if he'll ever do it again, but about, you know, just being at home.
I mean, you
porn.
Talk about off the dome.
Sure.
That's, I love it. But I love not knowing.
And you'll like this note. I said, you got to say cum, don't say sperm.
Yeah.
It's different. Just say cum. He's like, oh, yeah. And I said,
then what's great is that he then makes that bit the time Mark Maron told him to say cum instead of sperm.
Yeah,
and
right.
That's five whole other minutes.
Yeah, making me look like an asshole. But then also he references, one of his references about hack comics. You know, you can't do the airplane food thing anymore. Right. It's like, I got to talk about airplane food. It's like, no one knows what you're talking about.
Yeah.
That reference to a hack comic doing airplane food jokes is before you even started doing comedy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I gave him some other option.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Oh, he was in earnest talking about airplane food.
No. He was, you know, he
was doing the joke of the joke.
Well, the joke was about, you know, like being funny and how that's going to serve him and, you know, in the future when it's like Mad Max and he's tied to the front of one of those cars. He's like, hey, fellas, you know, the one about airplane food.
Oh, you're saying the reference, you got to even update it in that. Yeah.
He's making the hack comic tied to the front of the Mad Max machine. But he had referenced a better one, you know. Where he said, you know, a lot of comics are going to come up here, like their relationships are hard. And I said, why don't you do that?
Yeah.
You know, like on the front of the Mad Max. Yeah, like, hey, fellas, our relationship's hard.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
So I don't know. We'll see if he does.
That is funny to think that in our minds, we all register the airline food as like, it's kind of in the
it's actually a hack reference to a hack.
I know. Right. But I like that in your head, you're like, you've actually gone too far back.
Yes.
With the reference.
That's right.
No one will know what you're talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah. They don't. Hardly anyone does.
Yeah.
I arguably, we only knew.
Yeah.
At that time, and that's like almost...
Because we heard it so much.
Sure.
Other people are like, I've heard one comedian a year.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
But I don't even know if we heard it so much. We heard, you know, comics who were supposedly the guys who weren't hacks referring to it.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, there were jokes about airplane food, but I don't remember any of them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
My next hour will start with it.
Airline food?
Yeah.
You just take all the hack
That's
premises.
My promise that I'm putting in this permanent location of this episode that people will be able to reference. My next special will start with it.
Just airline food.
Yeah.
What? How old's your kid now?
8.
How's that going?
It's great. It's so depressing just because being a parent it makes you deal with your own shit. So much.
Oh.
And then you kind of try to block it and you see your own life through your kid's life.
Really?
Yeah, it's very bizarre. And also the world we live in, you constantly are wondering, like, will there be a future for my child?
Well, that thing.
In
I don't...
any capacity that you just keep trying to pretend as though there will be.
Yeah.
Or what can I do to help create it? And then you're like, what can I do as
Nothing.
One person?
Here's a toy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, where do you want to go today?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will say that was something I was talking about on stage is like, spoiling my child.
Yeah.
I came from a big family and I used to hate it when kids got what they wanted because it meant their parents had the money or they were the only child.
Right.
But I do get it. Now, specifically, because I'm like, well, the world is
terrible.
Got 10 years left.
Yeah, right.
I should just buy you whatever you want.
Yeah. 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 And so you're doing that.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
I try not to, but it's hard.
And what's the plan now? Are you acting in something?
Acting, trying to write. Where I want to finally write something that we shoot and I can say I've, you know, maybe at some point directed. But this specific year... I would like to write...
That doesn't involve you in front of anything?
I think these two things I'm working on now do.
Yeah.
But I would like to get to that point where I wrote something and was a part of something I didn't feel the need to to be in.
Yeah.
Or even start in that place of wanting to be in it. Sure. Really just to go, I want to create something and...
Yeah, you want to create something that makes you money while you're sleeping.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I've now graduated to that.
I want to be paid for my name being at the thing.
I've now graduated that element of my acting career.
But what are you working on?
Trying to go out with a show, trying to work on a movie idea.
Oh, okay. But nothing's in production?
Nothing's in production. It's all the start of it. But I feel good about everything. But it is the first time I've been like, you know what? Let's really sit down and try to make something as opposed to, hey, let's sit down and hope auditions come in. It's now in that space of like, oh, I don't mind auditioning. I like being in stuff. But, you know, that create your own opportunity thing just becomes more of a reality, I think, the longer you do it.
Well, that's the best thing about being a comedian is like you don't have – when you go out for auditions and you realize the life of an actor, what a fucking nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just waiting for someone to decide.
I think about it all the time.
Say stuff that's okay.
Yeah. Or finally get to be in something to see if you're capable of being in something.
Yeah.
You don't get to know. Whereas like, you know, for decades now, we could go on stage and find out, I didn't have it.
Yeah. Well, I'm right there.
You know, we can keep doing it.
Oh, yeah.
And you can and you can decide tonight, I'm going to go do three spots and you will do them.
Yeah.
But, you know, unless we write our own thing, you then have to hope you get an audition where someone goes, no, you make sense. Or you have to hope someone's written something where they go, no, it's always been Mark. It's got to be Mark. And they go, oh, great.
That happens.
You have to wait for that.
Yeah, but that happens a couple times. But a lot of times they're like, it's got to be Mark. We have no money. exactly. Director's never directed anything before.
Yeah.
But we think it's
And we have half a script. We're hoping Mark would actually write the second half.
Because it's him.
It's him, and so he'll know it.
Yeah, he'll
know what he would have decided.
But what
to
I
do.
See, I saw you in what, Babylon?
Babylon, yeah.
And what was it? Was there another one? I feel
Babylon,
like I saw you recently.
I was on Physical with Rose Byrne, show on Apple TV+.
Oh, I see that. With a regular part?
It was a regular part. I played her husband. It was great. It was so fun. That was very eye-opening in terms of like, oh, Rose Byrne, holy shit.
She's funny.
She's funny.
Yeah.
She's dramatic. She can do the full spectrum.
Yeah.
She does it. And I think you and I both know there aren't a lot of people that can pull off believable drama and very funny comedy.
No, she's kind of interesting.
It's a tough scale. And she's can go.
How many seasons did that go?
Three.
That's good.
We did three. Yeah.
Got your insurance, got some experience.
Got insurance. I got to do it for 3 years. It started during COVID, so it kind of just saved me because the road was gone.
Yeah, I bet you that's when I used to see Bobby, her husband, at the gym.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I'd see him across, and he'd come over, how you doing?
it's perfect.
Yeah.
He's a great guy.
Nice guy. Yeah. And what else?
I think I started painting. I paint now and I sell paintings.
But that was the only other thing I saw you in? Maybe I didn't see in Physical. It was just Babylon?
Babylon, Physical.
Didn't you do any bit parts here and there?
You know what's so funny? Do you ever do this? Like your IMDb gets brought to your attention.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, I'm doing better than I seem to think I am.
Yeah, but most of them as
it's
himself.
It's all little stuff, you know? Or then there's like, but then there's like things in there that are wildly significant, obviously. Sure. But, yeah, that happened to me recently where I've always just in my head, I think I live in this space of constantly thinking I've done five things.
Yeah.
And then the IMDb came up and I go, all right.
A few things.
I should accept reality.
Yeah, I'm doing all right.
Of this false story I'm telling myself over and over again.
Where's mine? How come I'm not getting anything?
I'm like, you're doing great. Yeah. You're on a show.
Yeah. Painting now?
I started painting. And now I sell paintings. And it's very bizarre. Yeah.
You and Kevin Christie.
Me and Kevin Christie. I message him to see if he likes any of my paintings.
You do?
He's a harsh critic.
Yeah, he does.
He's also very good.
He's very good. Are you doing the same world? Do you?
No, mine's very, not that his isn't or can't be abstract, but mine is very abstract.
Oh, really?
He's clearly very like educated and seasoned and knows
he's making decisions about.
I'm the asshole who has enough street cred to be able to sell an abstract piece, and people go, "Oh yeah, okay."
Are you just kind of winging it?
I saw you in Babylon.
Yeah, that's great.
I'm not winging it. I'm very like addicted to it. So it's now my like, whenever I'm not working on anything, go to the
never had any
and
real
paint.
Training. Just kind of
no,
doing
just started
it?
Doing it.
Oh, that's
and
great.
I love it so much.
Oh, that's great to have something like that.
I think so. I try to tell people they should do it. And they're always like, well, I'm not a painter. I'm like, yeah, but no one really is. And I'm not saying try to sell stuff.
You have a good sense of
color? I'm just
saying
paint just to do it. Better than I ever thought in my entire life am I decent at choosing like what colors kind of make sense. And I've never looked at myself that way. I always thought I was like an idiot about my clothes.
Yeah.
Didn't know what color coordination even meant. And I will say, when you start interacting with colors and having to choose them, it weirdly becomes, like, my favorite color is now fluorescent orange.
Huh.
And I would have never thought that. I think that's a ridiculous answer.
Right.
But now that I've interacted with it and I've used it, I realize I like what it does more than other colors I used to, like, love.
Yeah.
And it feels very bizarre. It feels very bizarre to suddenly have a compassionate feeling about colors.
And that it's the same color as like hunting vests.
Yes. And so all my stuff is safety themed. crossing guards, construction.
I think this probably all came out of your tucking your shirt in your pants.
It's all because I tucked my shirt in. I thought, you know, safety.
Yeah. But also just painting. It's like I can just, you know, do different things.
Yeah.
Changes everything.
I tell people to try it.
Yeah.
It's worth it. It's definitely worth it.
Well, buddy, it's good talking to you. Good seeing you. Your special's hilarious.
Thank you. Thank you for watching it.
There you go. I love that guy. He's painting. He's painting. The special is called Religion, Sex, and a Few Things in Between. It's streaming on Max. Hang out for a minute, people. Hey, listen, if you want to hear my thoughts about the Oscar-nominated films and performances, check out the new Mark on Movies bonus episode on The Full Marin. I'll drop some truth about Jimmy Kimmel as the Oscar host.
Where does he rank for you in the pantheon of Oscar hosts?
The best.
Yeah, I think he's definitely one of, if not the best, yeah.
Dude, that thing he did that one year, like, I will never, you know, he's won my heart over forever. When he brought those regular people into that room... That was one of the most subversive, most brilliant things. I don't even think he knows how amazing that was.
I've watched like a making of him doing that, and it was a big project too. Like it took a lot to get that to get pulled off, and they pulled it off live. There was nothing about that was all up to chance.
It was so great. Because it was a cultural, political statement, and it was hilarious. But to see some of those people just like, oh, my, look who it is. Like, and just how small it made everyone in that room look.
Yeah, yeah.
But here they were, you know, dressed to the nines, waiting for the results of the biggest night in their life. And they got to deal with these fucking regular people that come out, you know, that see them on the streets and at restaurants. And it was just... It was very humanizing and very powerful to me. That's one of two bonus episodes about the Oscars on The Full Marin this week. To sign up, go to the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. And just to remind you before we go, this podcast is hosted by Acast. I think I did all right with this riff.
Thank you.
lives. Monkey and LaFonda, cat angels everywhere.